This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
David Haglund grew up in the Church of Latter-day Saints. Not long ago, he joined us on the program to interview the new mayor of Salt Lake City about gays and the Mormon Church. Now, David hasn't been a practicing Mormon for quite some years, and this is the story of how that happened.
I grew up Mormon, and I was devout. I was devout all through high school. I went to church every Sunday. I have a memory of a Sunday school class from when I was in high school in which our Sunday school teacher brought in some of his friends, basically. I mean, other men in their probably late 20s to talk about their testimonies. Testimony is your belief in the church. The thing is that Mormons tend not to refer to belief so much as knowledge. I know the church is true. Even though I had been devout all through high school, and, you know, all through my childhood, I hadn't had the experience that some people spoke of, which is usually about the Holy Ghost kind of making you feel that, yes, I know that this is true. Maybe you're in church or you're reading the scriptures or something and you have this powerful feeling that convinces you of the knowledge of this. And that had never happened to me. And I remember this Sunday school class. Our teacher brought in some of his friends and they all talked about where their testimonies came from. And I realized they hadn't had those experiences either, really. They all talked about, well, you know, it wasn't one time. It was sort of gradually over. And I don't doubt their sincerity. But in the back of my mind, I started to think, huh, it seems like they don't know either. So that by the time I got to college, I started only going to church occasionally. But I would pray sometimes because that was the way that you were supposed to gain a testimony. You pray about it and you say, let me know, you know, tell me that this is true. And then my sophomore year, I started taking a class with a professor named Wayne Booth. And I took the class because I knew, one, that he was sort of a big deal in the English department. But what I also knew about him was that he had grown up Mormon too. I would go to Wayne Booth's office hours and say, I don't know what I think. I've always believed, but now I'm not so sure. You know, what does everything mean? What am I supposed to do? How do I understand the world if I don't understand it like this? And after one of these conversations, or in the midst of one of these conversations, he said, have you ever read the poem Sunday Morning by Wallace Stevens? And I had not. So I left his office and I went and I found the poem in an anthology, a paperback anthology. And I sat down and I read the poem aloud to myself. Sunday morning. Complacencies of the peignoir and late coffee and oranges in a sunny chair and the green freedom of a cockatoo upon a rug mingled to dissipate the holy hush of ancient sacrifice. She dreams a little, and she feels the dark encroachment of that old catastrophe as a calm darkens among water lights. Basically, I think that, you know, there's a woman sitting at home on a Sunday, stilled for the passing of her dreaming feet over the seas to silent Palestine, dominion of the blood and sepulcher.
Enjoying
her life, enjoying coffee and oranges.
Why should she give her bounty to the dead? What is divinity if it can come only in silent shadows and in dreams?
But it's Sunday, so she starts to think about Jesus. She starts to think about Christianity and faith. And over the next several stanzas, she kind of goes back and forth.
Divinity must live within herself. Passions of rain or moods in falling snow.
Wondering, is this necessary? You know, is the world that I am describing, this world of coffee and oranges and the sun, is that enough, or do I need an afterlife? Do I need some promise of eternity? After going back and forth in her mind with this sort of internal debate, here's how the poem ends.
She hears upon that water without sound a voice that cries, "The tomb in Palestine is not the porch of spirits lingering. It is the grave of Jesus, where he lay. We live in an old chaos of the sun, or old dependency of day and night, or island solitude, unsponsored, free, of that wide water, inescapable. Deer walk upon our mountains, and the quail whistle about us their spontaneous cries. Sweet berries ripen in the wilderness, and, in the isolation of the sky, at evening, casual flocks of pigeons make ambiguous undulations as they sink, downward to darkness, on extended wings."
When it was over, I decided, that's it. I'm leaving the church. Somehow it clicked. And among the things that are amazing to me now, looking back on that, almost 20 years later, is that this is, in some ways, the experience that I was supposed to have with the scriptures, and that many people I know did have with the scriptures. You're supposed to read the Bible and the Book of Mormon, and then afterwards have a testimony, you know, that yes, this is true. And that never happened to me with those books. But when I read this poem, I thought, that's it. I think I was partly being converted to literature. When my grandfather learned that I had stopped going to church, and he wrote me a letter to encourage me to reconsider, he also included a poem, a sonnet by George Santayana.
"O world, thou choosest not the better part."
And I'm sure he didn't realize this, but Santayana was a professor at Harvard when Wallace Stevens went there, and they exchanged poems themselves about reason and faith, in which they tried really to persuade each other.
"One that faith deciphered in the skies. To trust the soul's invincible surmise was all his science and his only art."
It meant a lot to me that my grandfather would send me a poem. I think he understood that poetry had come to mean a great deal to me. And in truth, it doesn't mean exactly the same thing to me anymore. I don't read it looking for those kinds of answers. Now, at 37, I miss the intensity that I had as a 19-year-old. I'm glad that I read Sunday Morning when I did, and I think there is something that can happen when you're at that age and trying to answer these enormous questions, and you read something that powerful, something happens. I don't really expect it ever to happen again, but I'm glad that it did.
The New Yorker's David Hagland.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.